financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm good because we're doing questions this week and it's not all about me. So that makes me feel a little bit better.
Have you recovered from the hot seat interview last week?
I did. And I've got to say that I love it. I just was hoping that other people were interested. But I do agree with you that so many people have to move and there's so many hidden costs that you forget about. So I think it was a good topic for Financial Fitness for sure.
It was a good topic. And as it happens with guests, you were a guest last week. As it happens, you know, people always say something that maybe I didn't think of, or I never heard anybody say before. And I won't say what it was. So people should go and look up the show on YouTube or find it on the archives, WHMP. But you gave one specific tip that I had never heard that I love.
Oh, good.
And I've told everybody about it. So yeah, but okay. I won't say what it was. Somebody will have to go hear the show to find out. But it had to do with saving a lot of money and living in a gray area.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So
that was really cool.
I know what you're talking about. All right. So, questions today. And I've got to tell you that some of these are a little complicated. So I'm really just throwing you to the wolves this week. But I know that you'll be fine.
I love that.
All right. Do you want to get started?
Yeah, we should tell people, though, I don't know what these questions are. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little game show. I have been clandestine in my office and Jess is collecting questions.
Yes.
And so fire away.
Okay. And also, just before we get into them, I do want to let people know that if they want to send a question in, we'll get them answered and you'll answer them on the air, not knowing. And if we do use your question on the air, you'll get a copy of the book, which is right behind you.
Oh, retire debt and retire well.
I never have to worry about forgetting the title because I can always see it right there, which I love.
So well, that's good.
Send your questions into info@hugyourmoney.com or you can send them here to me at jtyler@whmp.com. We're starting off with Stilco, and this is the name that they sent in, Stilco, S-T-I-L-C-H-O. I don't know if I'm saying that right or not, but it's a disgruntled employee in their 30s. They're describing themselves as a disgruntled employee. Stuck in a meaningless dead-end career, invested $40,000 in the stock market, more than doubling their initial investment by putting almost everything into a single stock. Stilco says he got lucky and achieved success in the market by not listening to his financial advisor who told him to diversify. Now he isn't sure how best to rebalance the portfolio without getting massacred in taxes. He has $10,000 in his 401k. That's the first part of the question. Then he's got a couple other parts to it if we get through this. It's complicated.
Okay. So does he say whether the stock market investment was an IRA or not?
I believe it was in AI.
Right. But he doesn't say whether it's qualified or non-qualified funds. Like he doesn't say it was within my IRA. I took money out of a CD IRA.
No,
and
he doesn't say that.
He doesn't say.
Sure.
So I have to assume that it's because of his tax question. I have to assume that it's non-qualified, meaning it's not within an IRA or a 401k. And that's why he's worried about getting hammered on taxes if he reallocates. So you know what I'm going to say. I'm not an accountant, right?
Yeah.
And that's my disclaimer. I do want to address a couple of things he said. First of all, I love that he knows he got lucky with one stock.
Right.
He got lucky. It could have been the opposite effect. And instead of doubling his money, he could have halved it or lost even more than that. I'm not sure that he did well by ignoring his financial advisor who said diversify, because we don't know what the diversification would have yielded. Mm-hmm. So that he might have done better by diversifying. He might have done worse. We don't know because we don't have that information. How best to balance that out without, I'm sorry if you hear that. That's my, do you hear that, printer?
A little bit, but that's fine. It's people sending you stuff. And maybe they're sending questions in right now.
It's busy cleaning itself, if you can imagine, because it's been used a lot today. Okay. Anyway, as to how to rebalance that the best way possible, that is a question for a financial advisor who probably, you know, Stilco won't like this, but they'll probably say, you know, you're not diversified. You're in one stock, and he'll have to kind of suck it up and say, yeah, I know, but I did really well. So there's two pieces of advice here. One is, yes, talk to an advisor who will help you rebalance that portfolio, talk to you about the tax ramifications, which we would all do. Any one of us would do that. Hopefully involve your accountant if it's necessary. Mm-hmm. But it should be within your comfort zone. Now, this person obviously has a fairly high risk tolerance. At least they did when they put $40,000 into one stock.
For sure, yeah.
And so it might be that they can rebalance still within high risk things, have several different kinds of stocks or several different kinds of equities or mutual funds or bonds or whatever might work for them. but within their risk tolerance. So they shouldn't listen to a cookie cutter thing like, hey, by the way, you're in your 30s, and so we're going to do this,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Because you are not just somebody in your 30s. You are you. All right. All of that being said, whew, so how to best rebalance that?
I haven't even gotten to the part two yet, Frances. We've got a part two.
Well, it's a subjective thing.
Yeah.
But as I said, you should not listen to a cookie cutter thing. However, one thing I do like is that they took the bull by the horns and said, I like this stock. I'm going to put money into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say this is a person who can tolerate participating in their own rebalancing, right? Mm-hmm. They could say, but I like these stocks. What are you going to put with it to counterbalance my maybe over-aggressive behavior?
Right.
Driven by my main point here, the fact that he's a disgruntled employee in his 30s, and that might be driving him to make erratic decisions about getting rich quickly. I got to get out of this job. Which stock will get me there? So I want you to get rich slowly, not at a snail's pace, but I want you to have some diversification and rebalance it. What could it include? You know, the best way to rebalance it, as I said, is subjective. Could it include? It could include things like stocks, of course. Mm-hmm. It could include things like hard metals, if you're into that, silver, gold, anything like that, if that's the kind of thing you like. It could include bonds. It could include mutual funds, which by their very nature are diversified. It could include offshore investments, if you have the stomach for it.
Mm-hmm.
It could include indexed annuities or annuities even. At that age, they're tougher to find, but you might find something that you like. Could include, you know, CDs. It could include basically anything you want it to. In part, if this is non-qualified money, they're not bound by the IRA guidelines, by the qualified fund guidelines. So the world is their oyster, basically. But I do want them to seek the help of an accountant regarding the taxation, whether they're going to be short-term gains, long-term gains, capital gains, whatever the tax term is that he's got to look at within this environment. He needs to know before he pulls the trigger so he doesn't get stuck with a tax bill at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
What's part two?
This is okay. So I think you answered some of part two, but Stilco says that he believes that AI and quantum computing will transform the U.S. and global economy. So with that in mind, how should he diversify his investments? What percentage should stay in the NASDAQ and or versus the Dow Jones? Also, what should he do with his investments if he doesn't own property and doesn't know if he wants to live and retire in the U.S. in the long run due to the emergence of political instability likely to emerge after November 5th? Wow, that's a mouthful.
This guy's a thinker. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't answer that on the air. It's way too complex, and I don't know anything else about his situation. So as I often do, I'm going to encourage him to call me.
Yeah.
You know, I do a free consultation. It won't cost him anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to have this conversation with him because he's got a lot of irons in the fire here. And he's clearly really trying to get a handle on this. This mm-hmm. is the kind of stuff most people don't want to talk about. They just want to ignore it and put money in the 401k and hope it does well. So bravo, Stilco, for doing your homework and thinking about this stuff. But I think you could make a great part of a team, but you need a good, strong advisor who's willing mm-hmm. to hear your ideas, not necessarily argue with you, but hold the mirror up and give you the kind of guidance you need so you can make these decisions, because he clearly is a person who wants to be in control of this portfolio. He just needs the right direction to do it.
Right. So, all right, definitely give a call. Let me get your number here. I'm going to get it at the end again, but just I think Stilco definitely needs you.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
I've got to say too, congratulations, Tim, for, you know, getting all that money in one stock, but it's almost would make you less cautious because you're thinking, oh, this is so easy. All right.
I think he knows he got lucky. Yeah.
Hopefully this one's a little less complicated. Ronnie from Greenfield, he's concerned about the U.S. government defaulting on its debt obligations. He thinks the government spent too much on COVID, foreign wars, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. He's nearing retirement, owns an apartment, but is worried that the U.S. government may experience a financial crisis in the next 5 to 10 years. Is he wrong? Does it make sense to invest in gold and silver, which you had mentioned? What bonds or stocks, if any, should he invest in to protect his investments? These are real complicated today. Yeah, they're.
I love these. These are really good questions. These are great. They're all great questions. First of all, let me get my crystal ball out and tell you that is the U.S. economy going to suffer a crisis? Oh, probably. We suffer crisis all the time. And we seem to get out of it by the skin of our teeth. Mm-hmm. How bad is it going to be or not going to be? The truth is, we don't know. This is like asking somebody, you know, I use the analogy, what kind of car to buy. You ask 100 people, you get 100 opinions.
Yeah.
If you listen to one news channel, you're going to head for the hills and stash your cash under your mattress. If you listen to another news channel, you're going to think everything's fine. Mm-hmm. And you know, inflation's just going to go away magically. So should he be concerned? Yeah, I think so. He's retired. He's living in an apartment, doesn't have a mortgage over his head. Mm-hmm. So one good thing is he could move if he had to.
Yep.
But I'm sure he's worried about rising costs and the situation with the government in, let's say it again, an election year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A crazy election year. I mean, I try not to get political, but at this point, I don't know. I mean, either of our two possible candidates at this point causes me pause.
Yeah, the debate was not stellar. We can all agree on that.
Yeah, I mean, we still have 4 months before an election. Who knows what will happen? We may see the opposite happen.
Yeah.
We just don't know. But that's, I think, his concern, is we are in an unknown situation. And in an unknown situation, so let me give him a word of caution. Should I buy gold and silver because they're hard metals and I'll be able to trade it?
I do hear this a lot. Right? I've had a couple of people ask me about gold, that it never goes down or whatever. And I'm like, I'm not the person to ask this. Ask Dr. Francis Ram.
Again, I can't give you specific advice because I'm not your advisor, and this is general advice. But here's my general school of thought. As I said, if you listen to one side of the news, you will hear at every possible opportunity, you will hear ads for buy gold, buy silver. It never goes down. This is what to do. Be afraid. This is how to stay safe. The other side, if you flip on the other side of the news, you won't hear those ads at all. Mm-hmm. They're almost never on there.
Yeah.
So they're searching for a specific market. And what bothers me about it is not whether gold and silver is a good investment. What bothers me about it is the reason they're searching for that market is because they want to make you afraid, and they know they can do it, and the money will flow in. Mm-hmm. Now, here's my rule of thought.
Okay.
By the time you are hearing it all over the place, it is too late.
Yeah, I think we talked about this before on another show. You've said that.
Yeah. Yeah, the reason you're hearing it all over the place is because people have already made gobs of money in it, and now they'd like to sell it to you at a high price. I mean, think about these kinds of things.
Yeah.
You don't want to buy stock high and sell it low. You don't want to buy metals high and sell them low. If you're interested in buying metals, do your homework while it's high and wait for it to drop and then get into it again. What else can you do? You can put your money in some places there are some guarantees. So you don't have to worry so much about what if the government goes belly up.
Is an annuity one of them? I just like saying annuity.
It could be one of them, depending on how big and fat and healthy the insurance company is, because we know what happens with too big to fail, right?
Yeah.
They don't go anywhere. But also, I think what this gentleman is worried about is, okay, we have trillions of dollars of debt. What happens if, for instance, China calls our notes? Mm-hmm. Are we in trouble? Are we? Yeah. But you know what? We are in a world economy now. If the U.S. is in trouble economically, so is the rest of the world. I hate to be pompous about it, right? We don't drive the entire world's economy. Mm-hmm. But we are linked together in a way that we didn't think we were 50, 60 years ago.
Right.
So what can I tell him to do? I could say, first of all, try to get some input from the other side of whatever you're watching that's telling you to buy gold and silver, and see what the other side says and educate yourself. And then really look at the prices. Look at the history for yourself. Don't just call one of these places that advertise and go, okay, why is this a good idea? Because I promise you, they will have all kinds of reasons it's a good idea.
Right. They want you to buy.
Definitely diversify.
Okay.
You know, think about money in a bank that might be FDIC insured or DIC insured. Think about an annuity that might be backed by the strength of a company. Think about some maybe municipal bonds or other kinds of bonds that you might be interested in at his age. Again, not to box him in, but do your homework. Don't act from fear. Please.
Ronnie from Greenfield, great question. We already have to take a break, but first I want to get your phone number.
So fast.
I know.
413-773-3333.
You can go to hugyourmoney.com. We will have more with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, coming up with part two of Financial Fitness right here on WHMP.
When it comes to investing, we're taught the higher the risk, the better the reward. Francis Ram, the money doctor, says it isn't necessarily true. We need to remember that with risk comes the potential for losses, and making up losses can set us back or worse, delay our retirement. You've heard the testimonials for years about how her patented program helps people become 100% debt-free far ahead of schedule. But did you know that for more than 35 years, Dr. Ram has been helping people retire well without unnecessary risk? Dr. Ram says most people mistakenly accept that in order to earn attractive interest rates, they must tolerate risk, and that choosing safety means settling for lackluster returns. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can earn competitive rates and minimize taxes without risking a single dollar of your hard-earned savings. Contact the Money Doctor at Hug Your Money for a free consultation. Call 413-773-3333 or visit HugYourMoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess.
We're throwing them at you today, man.
Yeah, I love that people are taking the time out of their day to actually write in questions like this. The more questions we get, the happier I am, because I don't want to talk about the same topics all the time. And and I want to talk about things that really pertain to people. So I would open this up to say, even if you don't have a specific question, if you have a topic that you think you'd like to hear more about, please write in about it, because I love those ideas. I want to be here to help you. That's our job, is to help you. And that being said, I hope that anyone listening to my questions doesn't think I'm being wishy-washy or evasive. I have a license on the line. Mm-hmm. I have to be careful what I'm saying for people. When I don't know them, when they're not one of my clients, when somebody is a client, I have a lot more leeway about the things we can talk about, still with some caution about regulations, of course. But yeah. I'm able to point you in a direction of people who are licensed for what you need or who can help you with what you need if I'm not the person to do it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to Alfredo from Amherst.
Oh, I love these names today.
He wants to know what he should do with his state retirement if he plans to live and retire abroad in Mexico or Costa Rica. He lives in Amherst, but is currently living abroad with his wife and two kids. He has around $15,000 USD in the Mass State Retirement Fund. Should he roll that into a Roth IRA, a 401k? What are the different tax implications if he lives abroad?
I love this question.
Okay.
So first of all, I would love to speak to him and find out what the tax laws are wherever he is living.
Okay.
I'm recalling many, many years ago, I almost bought some land in Costa Rica. And one of the draws for me was that it had great expatriate tax laws. In other words, I could earn as much money as I wanted, as long as I did it through the internet or whatever, as long as I didn't earn it in Costa Rica and pay no tax on it in Costa Rica. This was years ago, so I don't know if the laws have changed.
Okay.
And they would actually pay to move my stuff to Costa Rica so that I would live there.
Oh, wow.
So if you want to live in another country, you might start by finding out what happens to your income. Can you, you know, what happens to your Social Security, for instance, or your tax, your state tax retirement, taxable retirement, excuse me, if you're in this other country? Armed with that knowledge, then we could make a decision about what to do with your state retirement. The good news and bad news is it's not a lot of money. Now, that doesn't mean it's not a lot of money to Alfredo, right? But if he has to pay tax on it, it could be relatively well offset, perhaps, again, not an accountant, by doing other things. Should he put it in a Roth IRA, take it out? You know, he'll have to pay tax on this sooner or later. I would love to have a question with him, a conversation with him to learn more about what his goals are, what he needs to spend money on, when he needs to spend the money. Could he delay this taxation for a future time? Is there a way to get around it using the foreign country? Probably not. They're probably going to say, look, you're going to have to pay tax on it here if you take it out. But that's the kind of information we would need to make that kind of a decision. I think what he's looking for is, do I take a Roth IRA? Do I roll it into a 401k? Do I get an IRA? But those things, to try and clear this up for people, those titles are like an envelope.
Okay.
And you can put whatever qualifies to get into that envelope in there. So for instance, you could have an IRA that has mutual funds in it. You could have an IRA that has stocks in it. You could have an IRA that's in a CD. You could have an IRA that's an annuity. So the IRA itself is not the type of account. It's just the label on the account, right? Okay. It's not the type of investment.
Right.
It's the label of the account.
Okay.
And the same is true with a Roth IRA. A Roth IRA is simply you pay the tax on whatever you're putting into it now. You put the money in there, and when it grows and you take it out, you don't pay tax on it later. So
is that smarter to do it that way because you're going to pay less taxes?
That's what I was going to say, is it depends on his tax bracket.
Okay.
Some people are of the opinion, well, when I'm older, I'll be in a lower tax bracket.
Mm-hmm.
That is not necessarily true. Our tax brackets don't go by age only. They go by income, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why a conversation with this gentleman would be really interesting. We've had many people move to Europe, for instance, and I'm sort of familiar with that, but I'm not that familiar with Mexico. So that would be fascinating to learn. Can he get some tax benefits there, or even is he willing to live in another country that may have the kinds of tax benefits he's looking for and really make his lifestyle good, which is why a lot of people do this. They can't afford to live here. They move to another country. They're willing to deal with the different government or even happy to have a different government. You know, money goes a lot further.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry, Alfredo, that I can't answer, yes, just put it in a 401k or just put it in a Roth IRA. But I would be willing to help you. Certainly, we have clients all over the world. Everything's by Zoom now for us. So I'd be willing to help him if he needs my help.
Okay. Yeah. This question is from Jess in Northampton, which is me. I don't know if this is something you would know or not, but we talk all the time about how I watch House Hunters all the time and House Hunters International. Why do you have to pay cash for mortgages in other countries? I guess that's a really general question like these have been, but you can't get a mortgage, or how do people do that? You just have to save enough to be able to spend $100,000, $200,000, $300,000?
Often, yes. So one of the reasons that you can't always get a mortgage in another country is because they don't have the same debt system we have.
Mm-hmm.
They believe that if you can't buy it in cash, you can't buy it. If you look at the history of mortgages here,
mm-hmm.
not to get into a long explanation, but they weren't started by banks. They were started by insurance companies,
mm-hmm.
and they were less than 5 years. And the idea was the insurance companies would give you a little money in the hopes that they actually could foreclose on your house.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got picked up as, hey, wait a minute, this is a way to make money. The banks got involved, and we went from 5-year mortgages to 10 to 15 to 20, 30. Now we have 40-year mortgages, right?
Yeah.
We have it because people want immediate gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Americans are really good at wanting stuff right now.
And usually want something more than they can afford. They want the big, expensive house.
Well, and it's been a self-fulfilling prophecy. I've often said, why does a house cost $300,000?
Mm-hmm.
And people will say, well, because the supplies cost that. Why do the supplies cost that? Everything costs what it costs,
right,
in part because we figured out how to pay for it on time. I remember I had an interview with a gentleman from a local restaurant at one point, and he bought his first pair of shoes when he was 7. And I mean, that really drives the whole point home. So when you're in a foreign country and you can't get a mortgage, the way people do it in part is they usually sell property somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
and they take the profit and they buy a property there. But it's just not set up the same way. The debt system is not the same in other countries. I wish that we could learn some things from some other countries.
Mm-hmm.
We don't seem to do that all that well here, unfortunately. We're not very humble as Americans, I think, in general.
Well, you have a couple yourself?
I do. One in particular, this one came in last week, and I'm just going to read it. I have several severely delinquent credit cards, and I'm starting to get letters about being taken to court.
Mm.
Is there any way I can avoid going to court? They want me to pay a lot of money up front, and I don't have it. It's from Jackie in Hartford, Connecticut. Yeah, so this is a complex question, but let me try to give you the skinny on this, Jackie. So, yes, you can avoid going to court. You simply don't go. Now, let me tell you what will happen. I'm not an attorney or an accountant, right? I'm going to tell you my experience about what will happen with these kinds of, what she's talking about is a judgment letter. So she owes somebody money and they're saying, look, if you don't pay up, we're going to take you to court and we're going to get a judgment against you.
And they
probably are.
Are they adding more and more fees onto it too? Usually those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Fees, you name it, right.
Yeah.
So this is complicated, but basically she can go to court or she can not go to court. I would recommend that she goes to court, not fearfully. She just goes to court.
I don't think she's going to like that answer.
Well, it's going to get easier.
Okay.
Once she gets to court, I want her to find the attorney that's on her case before it ever gets in front of the judge and go to the attorney and talk to them.
So she doesn't have to hire an attorney. Just find the attorney that's on the...
She could hire an attorney. I'm certainly not going to recommend she goes without hiring an attorney.
I know, but that's going to be even more money.
But if she wants to go on her own...
Yeah.
If she wants to go on her own, which most people can do,
mm-hmm.
She'll find the attorney, and I'm going to give her some parameters right here.
Okay.
So if the judge says, yes, you owe this money, I'm going to issue a judgment against you in favor of the creditor, which is likely to happen because she took the money out and signed the papers or whatever, then the judgment rate is typically 12%. Okay, so that means she's got a 12% interest rate on this debt that she owes, which, let's just boil this down to brass tacks, that's 1% a month. So let's say she owes $10,000 by the time all the fees are added up and everything, right? Mm-hmm. So they're going to want $100 a month, right? Just to cover the interest, plus something against the principal. So if she can offer, say, $125, $150 or something that's affordable for her, has to be affordable, don't do this and not be able to pay it, because you'll just be back in court again. Mm-hmm. But if there's something affordable that will satisfy that, and she can talk to the attorney like a real human before it ever goes in front of the judge, the attorney may well be, you know, have the power to say, okay, we're going to take that. Then the attorney just goes in front of the judge and says, we're going to take that. Mm-hmm. You know, she's offered this payment. We cancel the case. We've made an agreement. Here it is. Now, it's got to be affordable. It has to be realistic. The attorney has to be reasonable also. Will that work? Probably. Now, either way, she's probably going to end up with this, maybe a payment arrangement or a judgment on her credit report. Mm-hmm. Not the end of the world. Okay. So the fear of they want to take me to court, how do I avoid that? Avoiding court is not necessarily what you want to do. You want to be a little brave here and go and speak to somebody in person and see what you can do about it. Now, you asked about fees and things like that. They are piling up. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, once these judgment letters go out, you start also getting calls from people who want to settle your debt. You know, we can settle your debt for $6,000 or whatever. Right. Just a word of caution about settling debt. Yes, you might do that. It might seem easy to you. It might seem like a good idea. First, you have to have the lump sum to pay, which you probably don't have, or you wouldn't be, you know, not able to pay this debt. And secondly, you're going to get that 1099-C at the end of the year for the forgiven debt, and you're going to add that to your income and owe taxes on it. So not all it's cracked up to be. I don't love the idea of settlement. A bankruptcy would be another way for her to possibly avoid court and get rid of a judgment. But she needs to talk to an attorney about these kinds of things. I've given as much general information as I feel like I can safely give just based on my own experience over the years.
But not a good idea to bury that letter in a drawer underneath a bunch of other stuff.
It's not. And my heart goes out to her because she's getting several of these letters.
Yeah.
So something big probably happened in Jackie's life. She got a divorce. She lost a job. She was ill. Something happened that she didn't share with me. And so now she's not only has those sort of emotional things to deal with, she's got several creditors after her. And your fight or flight thing just says, I'd rather flight. And so now is the time to fight as nicely as you can for yourself and try and get a resolution to that if you can. And if she needs my help, I'll help her.
All right.
Of course,
yeah. Well, unfortunately, we were out of time, but I want to get your phone number for people to call if they've got some questions or want to know any more about these questions. What would that be?
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com as well for more information. Thank you. These are my favorite shows. We get to do questions.
Mine too. Write in with your questions or ideas. We're happy to cover them on the air.
All right. We'll be back next week with Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
I'm Wendy.
And I'm David. We were getting married. Obviously, our finances were going to be combined and decided while we could certainly pay our bills, what we saw is something that would give us structure and the accelerated time frame to reduce and eliminate our debt. A couple of cars, mortgage and a home equity loan, and some credit card debt.
I think another big thing was he's older than me and he's looking at retirement sooner.
And we said there must be some way we can start to accelerate this.
Last month, I said, I think we're really close. Remember I called you at work? I said,
we're done.
It was so exciting. We're like, we should go out and celebrate and have dinner. We're done.
Debt budget, retirement. HUG works best when we work together. Visit HugYourMoney.com. HUG Your Money. So unique, it's patented.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hi.
Surprise. We had planned a totally different show for this morning, and we got into a conversation, you and I thought, you know, we really should do this if you are willing to share your story with us. So, so Jess and I have worked together now for, I don't know, three or four years. It's been a while. And I know that radio is a difficult business, and not unlike other things where you might have to relocate often. So Jess has relocated a lot. So I thought it would be interesting to just hear the sort of changes you've had to make in your career, where you've had to move, why, and what that does to your wallet, to your emotions. Can you give us any advice that might help people who have to relocate often?
Well, when I started off in radio, I started off at WHAI in Greenfield, Mass, doing a little bit of news. And then I got asked to go down to Springfield. The late, great Phil D. I don't know if you remember Phil D.
Sure, he was the Wiz, which is now your pure oldie station in Greenfield.
Yeah.
With Jay Dean
loved
on it.
Phil
absolutely.
D. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I worked with Jay Dean when I very first started. I used to go get his coffee at Dunkin' all the time in the morning for the morning show because I would do the overnights.
Nice
but I went
guy.
Down to Springfield. Wonderful. And I was there for 10 years. And it was great because I grew up in Western Mass. I'm a Hilltown kid. I grew up in the Hilltowns. Mm-hmm. So I was in Springfield for 10 years, which was great because this is my area. This is where all my family and friends are. But then the way radio works, there's budget cuts all the time. It's just not a secure field. They can make changes. They can switch formats. Anything can happen. So I got let go in Springfield and went down to Providence for 5 years. Again, this was the first kind of big move I had made, but it was still okay because I could drive home. But I will say that's when I ran into my first financial obstacle, because usually when you get hired in a new place, they'll give you somewhat of an allowance to move. They try to make it as cheap as possible. And that's when you find out, even when you're not moving that much stuff, how expensive it is to move anything. Like the pod storage, I kind of looked into that. It was so expensive. So by the time you're done moving a truck, just that was 3 hours, it was a couple grand. So
yeah,
it
really?
Gets really
wow.
expensive. It gets expensive. After that, I moved to Louisville. So talk about even more expensive because you're moving further.
To Louisville
Kentucky.
Wow.
Yeah. I was there for 5 years, then went to Detroit, Michigan, and then went to New Hampshire, and then back home.
Is that it?
So, yeah.
So far.
Well, Connecticut in there too. But so, yeah, back home now where I'm close to my family and friends, which is great.
What else was in there too?
I was in Connecticut for a little bit too, but I would drive back and forth. So I would stay like in a hotel a couple days a week. But Connecticut to me is still, you know how we are. If it's like New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Maine, Connecticut, we're like, okay, that's still home.
They're close. They're close.
Yeah. So, but there's a lot of things that go into it, like with finances and trying to figure out cost of living in each new place. Like you might get offered a salary and it sounds amazing, but if you don't do the background work to find out what's the cost of living there, then it could really not be that great.
So I'm going to ask you to go backwards for quite a bit now. Mm-hmm. Well, not that long for you, but to when you decided you wanted to be in radio. Because what I'm thinking is that there may be young people listening to us who have decided this is their path in life, whether it's radio or something else. And maybe a parent or a loved one is saying, yeah, I don't know if that's the most stable thing. I'll use a musician as an example. You know, it's one of the common ones that people want to go into music and their parents say, you should be a lawyer. You should be a plumber. You should be a doctor because you're never going to have financial stability. So would you tell me a little bit about what that process was like for you when you were thinking about what you wanted to do for a career and somehow settled in radio?
Well, I think that for every kid that got told they talked too much in school, I think that's all the radio kids were the kids that got told that. So I wasn't really sure. I wanted to either be a lawyer because I liked the debate part, or I wanted to write for Rolling Stone magazine. Like I wanted to follow the musicians around and write for Rolling Stone, almost famous, like my favorite movie. So I got into music and loved doing music and booking shows and kind of doing all of that. So really it was to find something where I could talk for a living.
Yeah. You know, you're just making me think maybe you should just book our band. You can book my band.
I could do that. I did that for years and years and put together shows and booked artists and did all that stuff because I worked on music stations. Yeah.
It is really always fascinating to me to do this kind of an interview, which is really what this is. This is us learning about Jess Tyler, my co-host, and you know, the path that you've taken to get here. So those are very interesting choices, either a lawyer or writing for Rolling Stone magazine.
Yeah, exactly.
You've come closer to one than the other, and we all know which one that is. So what was it like to work on the country station? You worked on a country station for quite a while, right? On Wix?
Yeah, I worked at Kix, and then I worked at Cat Country in Providence, and then a country station in Louisville. I loved it because I've worked on, and I'm working on a rock station now as well, but I've worked in all different formats, and country was the best as far as being able to connect listeners with their favorite artists. You'd be able to get artists to come and do shows, especially at the beginning of their career. So like Taylor Swift came to the station when she was 16 years old. So wow. I've known her for, you know, almost 20 years now. Garth Brooks didn't come to the station, but I got to go to many events to see him. The late, great Toby Keith, I got to go to his house. Keith Urban, who is probably my favorite, I got to ride in his tour bus for a week and go from show to show. I was really good friends with his record person that managed him. So we just got to ride in the tour bus, and it was amazing. So I've had some really amazing experiences. Yeah. Wow. We went all the different shows. Yeah, it was really fun.
Let me take a side road here then for a moment, because I know people watching this or listening to this will want to know that. Stories, please. What happened on a week with Keith Urban on a tour bus? What kind of memories come to mind?
Oh, man. I would just say that my favorite memory of it, besides the fact that he walked around with no shirt and he's the best smelling man in the world, besides that, this was when Golden Road was coming out, which is a huge album for him. And before it had come out, he played each song for us and told us like a little bit. It was just me and my friend Nancy, who was kind of his manager. And he told us about each song and, you know, why he wrote it. And so we got kind of like a preview before the world had heard the album. He probably played it for some other people, but it wasn't out yet. And so that was just an amazing memory. It was really fun. Although I don't know if I'm a curse or not, because the whole band got fired after that trip and he hired a new band. So I might be the curse, but I've got some really great pictures and some really fun memories. One of the most fun was he did Mohegan Sun, played Mohegan Sun, which is always a fun venue to go to. And it's just really cool kind of being with the band, like sitting on the sound stage and kind of getting that experience. Yeah.
So I'm interested in this because, of course, on radio and TV, we can't smell him. Mm-hmm. So you said he was the best smelling man in the world. Did you ever find out why, what he wore?
No, and I will say this. I'm not the only one to say this. Men and women alike say it. It's some kind of, I don't know if it's like pheromones. That's for women. I don't know what guys have, but he just smells great. And I'm sure what he has is some expensive custom-made cologne, but really, guys and girls alike all say the same thing when they meet him. Not only is he a nice guy, but everybody brings up how good he smells.
Can you imagine now there's somebody listening to this who's in advertising who's saying, I need him to sponsor my cologne.
I'm telling you. And it's great that guys will say it too. They're like, hey, I'll admit it. He smells good. And there's never a time he doesn't smell that good.
Yeah.
So it was pretty incredible.
And it may be a combination of things. Sometimes if people comment on my scent, they say, what is it? And I'll say, it's my clean cocktail. You know, it's a perfume. It's my shampoo. It's my conditioners, whatever. You know, it's this sort of mix of things that somehow is identifiable. Anyway, so I asked you about a country station, but is the pay different between different types of stations? If you worked for a jazz station, for instance, do they pay you more or less?
No, I wouldn't say it goes by the genre of music for sure. If it's like, say, a small Christian station, it might be less than like a mainstream big station, but it really goes by market size. So it depends what market you're in, how many listeners you have. So when I was in Detroit, that was a major market. That was top 10 in the whole country. Here is like, you know, like a medium-sized market. But yeah, it depends on each market and it depends on each company. But the problem is there's not a ton of job stability, which I think is true in a lot of different fields. But the difference is, for example, I use my sister, which I do a lot. She's a nurse. So say something happened with her job, she could get a job anywhere and not have to move. But when you're yes. working in radio, there's a limited number of stations and those limited number have a limited number of positions, which are getting smaller and smaller over the years. So it's much harder to find a job without moving across the country.
Yeah.
And then that's when all the money comes in. You know, early on, like when I had moved from Springfield to Providence, there was like 6 months in between and I cashed out like my 401k and then got stuck with that big 30% tax and like just things you learn along the way, like don't do that. At the time I was like, okay, I've got to live on this. So I don't care about the 30%. There are probably other things I could have done, but I didn't know that at that age.
Yes. I want to talk to you more about, you know, the family situation, having to pick up kids and move, getting a divorce in the middle of all this, anything you're willing to share with our listeners mm-hmm. about how you continue to land on your feet financially, because you are very self-effacing, but I know for a fact you managed to land on your feet financially, despite mm-hmm. the fact that you always talk about your sister is good with money and you're not.
Yes, she is.
Here you are with two healthy kids, you know, well-adjusted and all of that. So I would like to talk more about that. And in particular, something like when you're living in Detroit and you're getting paid more money and the market share is big, but it costs you more. Do you mm-hmm. find that that is that's similar in lifestyle to living in a smaller market but having less expenses? And I really want to go into some detail about that in the second half if we could. But just before we go to break, and folks, can you tell we've turned the tables here? Before we go to break, can you tell me if there's one more thing you'd like to say to people that are listening about if you're trying to decide on a career and somebody's mm-hmm. talking to you about money, what's your advice about that?
I mean, I think my advice would be to figure out something that you love to do and then not just say, okay, I'm going to go for that. Figure out a way to get paid to do whatever that thing is. So for example, if you love to talk, it might not be radio, but it might be a podcast. It might be a public speaker at different events. It might be you're working at a bank, but you're in charge of media and publicity, public relations. So mm-hmm. there are different ways. Like if you can figure out and identify the one thing that's not going to make you feel like you're having to go to work every day, but figure out how to get paid for it, yes. I think that you're going to win for sure.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely true. You can take us to break because that's your job. And and we'll come back and hear more about my co-host, Jess Tyler.
All right. Well, I want to get your phone number, of course.
Yeah. In this case, we're giving out my phone number, not Jess's.
Yes.
Although if you have questions, I will forward them to her. So my phone number is 413-773-3333 here at Hug Your Money.
Okay. You can also visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with more, I guess, of me coming up.
More of you
and Frances Ram and the Money Doctor with Financial Fitness on WHMP.
Want to know what it would feel like to be financially unburdened? Let your HUG financial coach help you take a load off. Do it for yourself and for those you love. HUG Your Money. So unique, it's patented.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, and we're talking about me, which makes me nervous.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Frances Ram, and this is my co-host, Jess Tyler, who has graciously agreed to let us peek into her life of radio with all of its financial drama, if you will, because of the turnover in radio. And I know that. I mean, we've been on the air 15 plus years, I think. And, you know, DJs have come and gone, general managers mm-hmm. have come and gone, salespeople have come and gone, PR people come and go, and sometimes stations come and go. We talked about Phil D, who had a station called The Wiz, an AM station called The Wiz, which the Saga stations bought and have relabeled as Pure Oldies that Jay Dean is on. And, you know, he's only the third voice for color that they've ever asked to be on that station in 40 years. But he's very proud of that because that never happens. So, you know, you bring up a point. It just doesn't have to be radio. It could be anything where you have to pick up and move. Certainly military personnel, they have it down. I mean, they just go. Yeah.
This is they can pack up quick and go and start over. Yeah. I mean, I think it's harder on kids, you know, definitely, especially in military families. I did not move when my son was little because I didn't want him to have to start a new school and be away from his dad. I will say I got divorced before I got into radio, so that made it easier. I didn't have to think about somebody else finding a job or, you know, because you got to take that all into consideration when you're deciding to move. But as I said before, with radio, most of the time you're going to be required to move.
Yeah. How old are your children now?
Well, I have my son who's older, and then my two grandchildren who are like my kids are 5 and 6.
I can't believe you have grandchildren. Nobody who sees this will believe you have grandchildren.
Well, I talk about them as like my kids all the time because they're with me all the time. So it's kind of like my second chance because I had Tyler so young. Yeah. So now I just have so much more patience. But when Tyler was little, I didn't move. I was in Springfield for 10 years. So he grew up on the radio with me. I brought him. He was under the production room board. I gave him a little sleeping bag and a DVD player. Anytime we had any kind of like skits that involved kids, like he went back to school shopping with Shaggy and, you know, did all the little stunts and stuff for us. Went on stage. He used to sign his autograph, Tyler Tyler.
Oh, really cute.
That's so cute. Yeah. But then once he got older, I was able to move. But it is harder. Like when you're figuring out when they're offering you a salary, you have to figure out the cost of living. You also have to figure out one thing I kind of forgot about is when you're away from home and have to fly back, how much it's going to cost you for airfare a couple times a year. Like all of these things affect your pocketbook a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. You have some tricks that you can share with people, like how you made ends meet when you had to.
Yeah. I will say that I've done this in almost every place that I've moved to. This is kind of my little trick that I do, especially if you can do something where it's like a one bedroom or a small two bedroom. I always, like, for example, when I went to Detroit, I looked for the best zip code in Detroit that I would never be able to afford, which was Bloomfield Hills. Kind of like the rich area of Detroit, about a half an hour away from the city. So I would look in those areas and then look for like a wealthier person who had a property that had either an apartment above their garage or a little house on the property and rented that. So I lucked out when this happened in Louisville. This happened in Louisville twice, happened in Detroit, happened in New Hampshire. All three of those times I found like an in-law apartment. So everything was included in the utilities. And I paid one price and had, like in Detroit and Bloomfield Hills, I had my own little house. It was down the end, so I never saw the people that owned the house. And I was in a zip code that was a zip code I could have never afforded. And it was really great.
What a sweet deal. And what a great tip. I think most people would not think to do that. They look for apartments, they look in the ads, and they find out what's available. Mm-hmm. Do you think that your rent was more affordable because people who were well off didn't necessarily want to capitalize on it? They just wanted somebody in the apartment. Maybe they thought, you know, I'm renting to a single woman with a son. This is important to us to help out, and we can do it.
Yeah, I think that if you present, like, I think it didn't hurt that I was on the radio in their area so they could listen to me. They knew who I was, and they knew it wasn't going to be, you know, almost every place I've worked, I've done the morning show. So they knew I'm getting up at 3:30. I'm not going to be having raging parties at 1 a.m. So they felt good about that. So yeah, for sure. The little house that I rented, I paid $1,400, including everything besides cable. And could they have gotten $2,000 or $3,000 for that? For sure. For sure. Yeah. But a lot of people that are in that wealthier zip code don't want to deal with any problems. They just want to have it all contained. They didn't have to worry about like me getting the electric turned off or something like that because the utilities are included. So yeah, every place I've gone to, I've typed in when I'm looking on the sites, carriage house or in-law suite. And if you type in those two things, you'll find some little secrets that pop up.
Those are great. Yeah. That's a great tip. What's the first thing you do when you land in a new area to get, you know, with a child, for instance, to get your bearings and kind of get a real sense for how much money you're going to have to spend monthly? I mean, now with the internet, you can do a lot of that in advance, but what is top priority for you when your boots hit the dirt?
Yeah. Well, I will say the only place that I moved to with my son was Providence. So in that particular instance, I made sure that it was a good school. Like I moved to the area where it would be the good school district for him. Without him, which has been most of the moves, one of the main things, like one of the really great things about New Hampshire was there was no state income tax. So your check ended up being a lot better. So when you were figuring out how much the salary that factored into my decision where I maybe accepted a lower amount because I knew my take home was going to be more. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was a smart financial move or not, but just that factored in where some other places were, you know, not as great. So the first thing I do when I move, I should say this. The first thing I do when I move is I would go to any kind of rental site to look to see how much apartments in the good areas were going to be. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing I did when figuring out if, am I going to be able to even afford to do this? Am I going to be able to afford to fly home when I want to reasonably, or am I going to be struggling and be away from family?
Yeah, well, you bring up a very good point about taxes. It's a thing that people ignore, even when they're house shopping. They'll say, mm-hmm. well, this is how much mortgage I got approved for or pre-approved for, but they forget mm-hmm. to add in their taxes, and that puts them over a limit, and then they end up in trouble. And the same is true of renting. I mean, some states, you have to pay tax on your clothing, right? Whereas other states, you don't. Some states, there's tax on food, more tax on some items than others. Excise taxes can be higher than others. Maybe your car insurance is going to cost you a lot more where you're mm-hmm. going. So when we run these scenarios with young people, we teach them how to figure this out. We call it moving backwards. But it's moving backwards because what I want them to do is go on the internet, you know, look for a place, look for Detroit, Michigan, if that's where you're going to have to move, right? Or that's where you think you want to live. Then go get the statistics because they're all out there. They're all on government sites. What's the starting salary for somebody in your position in Detroit, Michigan? So you get that number. Then you say, what's the average cost of renting in Detroit, Michigan? And you get that number. And that, at least the rental number or the mortgage number and your income number is a good starting point, because what you're looking for is all of your debt. So your mortgage or your rent, where even though technically rent isn't debt, let's call it a living expense, your mortgage or your rent, your car payment, your credit cards, anything that is debt like that, you want to pay no more than 1/3 of your paycheck before
which
taxes.
Which is very difficult to do right now. Yeah. It's
yeah,
the cost
before
of
taxes to cover
rent
it.
Or, it's a lot harder. It used to be much easier to be at that number. Now I have talked to so many people that half their check goes to rent or mortgage.
Yeah, well, this is a complaint of mine from a long time, because when banks approve mortgages, it's done, and it's not really the bank's fault, right? But they do it right now on paper, what the numbers look like. And then things change, right? You might lose a job or expenses might increase, inflation might be up, whatever it is. And that number that you were approved at initially no longer works. It's a moot point. And you don't get to say, well, wait, I want to pay 20% of my income for my mortgage payment. It is what it is. So I think that's interesting. One thing I would ask you about right now, because groceries are so expensive right now, did you do a little recon mission? I know when I moved here, I went to like every grocery store, not just for price, but where can I shop? What can I do? You know, who's open the right hours? Do they have the things I want? And how are their prices? Did you do like a little recon every place you went to find the stores that you liked best and factor that in?
100% did. Like, they have kind of the equivalent of an Aldi and then kind of the equivalent of a Whole Foods. So you kind of knew which one was going to be a little bit better pricing. The other thing that I did too, which is hard to do, especially if you're moving to a new area, you pick the places that look beautiful and that you'd love to live in. So for example, in New Hampshire, I would have loved to live in Portsmouth on the water, but I ended up picking Dover, which is still expensive, but it's not Portsmouth on the water expensive. Yes. So, you might have to kind of drive around the area and figure out, like, yes, I would love to live here, but I'm going to be so tight, it's not going to be a fun place to live. I'm not going to be able to go out and do anything and explore. So that's kind of hard when you kind of have your head set on, this is my dream location or dream house or apartment, to really kind of be honest with yourself about what's life going to be like living there with no money.
That's a very important point, because if the reason you're doing this is to have, a better life, and you're so strapped you can't have a cup of coffee, you're not going to feel very good about it. That's another good example. Now, I live in Montague City, 8 houses from the Greenfield line in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. So my taxes are about half of what they are in Greenfield. Now, I don't have children, so the school system wasn't a factor for me or anything. I just found a house on the water that I liked and said, that's an affordable price for me. But it's a big difference in taxes from me to 8 houses away. And yet I still have the same proximity to, the major routes that I want to get on because it's convenient, all of that. I happen to have a house that backs up to the Connecticut River here, whereas in Greenfield, I might not be able to afford that or get that or want that. So mm-hmm. I think proximity and being flexible is really important, but that's probably the key point. And I want you to talk about this a little bit, if you could, before we end. When you have a job like you have,
mm-hmm.
first of all, were you aware going into it how much you might have to move? And secondly, what does flexible mean to you? How do you decide what you have to do?
First question, no. I didn't think I would have to move this much. You know, I kind of thought if you're good at your job and, you know, you'll keep that job. But that's just not the way this business works. So flexible for me was, you know, am I willing to move somewhere on my own? You kind of have to make a whole new set of friends. You have to kind of adjust to not being around for every event at home or be able to go to things anymore or have that person that you like to go to things with. Like I like to bring my sister to stuff and I couldn't do that unless she flew out to see me. So you kind of have to adjust that. Right now, kind of a big reason why I'm back home, I've been offered other jobs or, you know, other places in the country, but it's do I want to give up being around family right now at this point in my life versus when I was 25? And right now it's a no. You know, I'd rather be here and not miss out on the things where maybe I'm not doing exactly what I want to be doing as far as booking concerts and doing all that kind of fun stuff anymore. But I'm still, you know, doing something that I love and I have the benefit of being around my family right now.
Yeah. You know, every time we talk, Jess, you say something that causes me to make a comment that is something I never thought I would say on the air at that moment. Right?
Oh, boy.
Every show is almost always a surprise. But you just brought out the financial coach in me with that statement about, well, I moved here for all these emotional reasons and I could come home and make a living. But I really, you know, I had to give up doing all that fun stuff like booking concerts. And the financial coach in me immediately was like, no, no, you don't have to give that up. Let's talk about that. And I really, yeah. When we get off the air, we really should talk about this because I think you could be doing both things. And mm-hmm. if that would bring you enjoyment, it would certainly help out a lot of other people and put more cash in your pocket. That could be a big win-win for you. And yeah. I didn't know that you had that much experience at it, but clearly you do. And even if you didn't, if you were just a client that I was talking to who said, I had to give up something I really loved to do to be able to move here, I would say, well, why? I mean, maybe you have to be flexible again, right? Maybe you don't book Taylor Swift, but maybe you book, you know, some local bands that are really hot or something. And that's
right.
That's enough for you, you know, but yeah, the all or nothing thing is difficult. And I know that you value your sister very much. So in closing, I just would like to hear just one comment you have about your sister.
Oh gosh. In regard to what? Just anything?
Anything you want.
I will say that she is kind of the glue that keeps the family together. We lost both our parents, my dad very young and my mom, you know, about 15 years ago. And she's kind of kept everybody together, although it's a little bit more tough love. I like a little more soft love, a little more tough love from her. But I will say, you know, if you've got somebody in your life that will pick up whatever you're doing and, you know, move you to a different city or help you out if you need a plane ticket home, value that because that's just it's just a good thing.
Yeah, thank you. We always talk about money, but in closing, I'm going to just say the same thing I say all the time. Money is a means to an end. It isn't that it isn't important, but it mm-hmm. should, in my opinion, be used to afford you the things that are important in life to you.
I hope this was interesting for people, and I hope I didn't bore them.
I doubt that anybody was bored, but I thank you very much for doing it because we really did have a totally different show planned. But when inspiration strikes, you just do it. So
awesome.
Thank you, Jess.
All right, well, let me get your phone number. You're welcome. Let me get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com too for more information. And I think we're going to have questions next week, right?
We have questions this week, but we'll do them next week. You bet.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jess. Would you like to see your business on Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor? We offer a 15-year proven track record. We have limited openings, but are currently seeking sponsors and guests. Is your business a good fit? we'd like to start a conversation. Contact us today at 413-773-3333 or info@hugyourmoney.com. Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well. All under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
Every Saturday morning. We used to sit at the table till like lunchtime when I'd be like, it's so beautiful out. Let's go do something.
I told you. I'm Kevin.
I'm Shannon. Believe it or not, it was me who wanted to do this, not him. He was very hesitant. I'm like, there's no harm in getting some advice.
And this thing is incredible.
He does. He says it every time. He'll look at it and he's like, every time I hear the same thing. Wow, this is going to be paid off so fast. Oh my God, this is the best thing we ever did.
We make plenty of money between us, but it doesn't mean that we didn't need help.
Manage your debt, budget, and retirement. HUG works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money certified financial coach today. Visit hugyourmoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.